What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. In 2 days, in 2 cities, 2 mass shootings have left at least 29 people dead. 2 stories from one of those shootings. It's Monday, August 5th. Simon, tell me about this Walmart in El Paso, Texas.
Well, this Walmart is not only one of the busiest of the more than 4,000 stores that Walmart operates in the United States, but it's one of the 10 busiest stores anywhere in the country of any retailer.
Simon Romero is a national correspondent for The Times. I reached him in El Paso.
It's located just minutes from the border with Mexico, so that means that it receives a great deal of foot traffic from people who are crossing the bridge from Ciudad Juarez into El Paso. It really caters to the predominantly Hispanic population in El Paso and, of course, the shoppers who are coming from the other side. There are Mexican soccer jerseys for sale, for instance. Almost the entire staff at the Walmart is bilingual. The pharmacy staff, they're experts in pharmaceutical language and Spanish and in all the terminology that they need. So it's really a well-known location in El Paso. And this was the store that the shooter walked into on Saturday morning.
My name is Sergeant Robert Gomez. I'm the public information officer with the El Paso Police Department. Like we said earlier, we are going to be giving you briefs throughout the day to give you information as it develops. The estimates of the shoppers at Walmart were between 1 and 3,000 with 100 employees present. It is back to school, and the Walmart was at capacity when the shootings occurred.
Families from both sides of the border, from both Ciudad Juarez and El Paso, were in there especially to buy school supplies for the upcoming school year, which is starting on both sides of the border.
As of right now, like I confirmed earlier, we do have one person in custody. I can confirm that it is a white male in his 20s. I don't have any other information on that, but that's the information we have right now.
The shooter ended up killing at least 20 people inside the store and wounding dozens and dozens of others. The youngest victim that we know of is a 10-year-old girl who is a Mexican citizen who was wounded and who is now recovering in a hospital in El Paso, according to Mexican authorities.
That's about all the information I have right now, but I will take any questions.
Where was the shooter apprehended?
I don't have the location of where the shooter was.
Simon, what is the significance of the shooter choosing that Walmart in that location?
Well, people throughout Texas have commented since this atrocity unfolded that the shooter could have chosen a Walmart close to home. He could have done this in the suburbs of Dallas or Fort Worth. He could have driven elsewhere to a place in South Texas to carry out this attack. But he didn't do that. He chose to drive all the way across the state of Texas to El Paso in the far west region of the state. And I think the choice is really telling because this is a city that has been at the epicenter of the whole debate over immigration in the United States lately.
The El Paso County Medical Examiner's Office released its report Friday in the death of 7-year-old Jacqueline. Jacqueline was one of 2 children to die in Border Patrol custody.
It's the place where migrant children have died while in federal custody.
They found about 250 babies, children, and teenagers without adequate food, water, and sanitation.
Just on the outskirts of El Paso, there is a Border Patrol facility that has come under intense scrutiny over the treatment of migrant children.
So this is actually happening just outside of El Paso in a town called Clint.
So it's no secret to anyone in Texas, really, or anywhere else in the United States, that El Paso has a lot of scrutiny cast on it these days. And it's very telling that he chose not only this Walmart, which is just minutes from the border with Mexico and which is regularly filled with shoppers from both sides of the border, but he chose a Walmart that's in a city that is predominantly Latino and that in some ways exemplifies the fears that many conservatives have in Texas. And I'm not just extremists, but mainstream conservatives as well over demographic changes in the state and what that means politically in the years to come.
And what exactly are their fears?
People are flocking in from California and from New York, and they're bringing their voting habits with them.
The population of Hispanic Texans is growing 9 times faster than the population of white Texans.
Texas is on the verge of becoming the first state in the U.S. with a majority Hispanic population.
It's tied into really this battle for political supremacy in Texas. This is a concern that is voiced among the highest echelons of political power in the state of Texas, whether it's the governor or the lieutenant governor or members of Congress.
Well, yeah, we have a demographic problem here in the state of Texas. As everyone knows, in the last 15 years, the amount of economic and population growth that we've experienced has been unmatched across anywhere in the country.
Republicans kind of see the writing on the wall, and they see shifting demographics, meaning more Democratic voters in the future. It really symbolizes where Texas is heading in some respects. You know, it's not only a heavily Latino city, it's also a Democratic bastion. This is the home of Beto O'Rourke, for instance. So they see these changes as portending a big political shift sometime down the road in Texas. And interestingly, that's a sentiment that was also shared by the shooter in this attack. He expressed that type of thinking in the manifesto that he posted just moments before he carried out the shooting.
So he specifically refers to these demographic changes, the growth of the Hispanic population in the state.
He does. He also uses the term invasion to describe what's been happening demographically in the state. And that's a term that's been used by other people in power, not just in Texas, but on the national level, to disparage immigrants and migrant families time and again in our ongoing immigration debate. So he's not someone who suddenly emerged from the extremes of this debate. In some ways, he's really reflective of the mainstream debate in Texas and the ways in which people are talking about immigration in the state now.
I found it kind of haunting how political the shooter seems to have understood that his attack would be, even before he carried it out, with everything you just said as the backdrop.
He seems to have been very much aware of the political ramifications of carrying out something like this. In his manifesto, for instance, he points out that he has thought this way since before the election of President Trump back in 2016. But really, we have to remember that El Paso has consistently ranked among the safest cities in the United States now for decades. And a lot of people have pointed out to me in conversations over the past couple of days that this is a city that has been at the forefront of the debate over border security. And yet, in a way, it's beyond ironic that the threat in this case, the shooter, didn't come from outside the country. He didn't scale a wall. Mm-hmm. He came from really from the heart of Texas and drove all the way across Texas to carry out this attack.
And he wasn't an immigrant. He was a white American opposed to migrants coming across the border.
That's right. And that's something that has really shaken people up in El Paso. This is someone who really could have been a neighbor to many people in this city or a neighbor to many people in the state of Texas. He is someone that's not going to be detected by the Border Patrol or by ICE. And, you know, no wall is going to stop an assailant like this, an attacker like this. So many people are asking, what can be done to prevent this type of threat from materializing again? They are asking whether it's safe to go into their favorite restaurant, whether it's safe to go into their favorite stores and go shopping. And they're wondering if they're going to be targeted because of the language that they're speaking or because of the color of their skin. And that's something that has people very troubled right now.
Simon, thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
We'll be right back.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for the New York Times. I grew up in Texas, on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that voters don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray. And that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, especially in such a critical election year. And that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at the New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to the New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Hi, this is Jenny.
Hey, Jenny, it's Michael.
Hey, Michael.
Jenny, can you tell me about this thing that happened to you this weekend in El Paso?
So Saturday, there was a presidential forum with more than a dozen, maybe even two dozen of the presidential candidates in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Jenny Medina is covering the 2020 presidential campaign.
It was a gathering of hundreds of union members. And all the candidates were there to try to get the endorsement of this union. And it was around lunchtime.
All right, folks, it's almost lunchtime. A couple more candidates coming next, Beto O'Rourke.
And then Beto O'Rourke came to the stage to speak.
Hey.
Hi.
Morning.
Pleasure.
Morning. Thanks for having me out. Buenos dias. I've got to share something with you that I just learned on my way out here to see you. In my hometown of El Paso, Texas, there is right now an active shooter or shooters at the Cielo Vista Mall. And we heard some initial reports of a very high number of people who have been injured right now. And so I just, you know, I'm thinking about El Paso. I want you to be thinking about El Paso as well, and just that, you know, any illusion that we had that progress is inevitable or the change that we need is going to come of its own accord, shattered in moments like these.
And this is his district in his hometown. This is, you know, where he spent all of his professional career, and it's pretty hard to overstate how tied his identity is to El Paso.
And so, I just wanted to tell you, I'm grateful to be here with you and to the people of El Paso. Any of you who are here today or who are out there right now, we are thinking about you and we want to make this better going forward. Thank you all for having me.
So, because I'm on the presidential campaign and covering him, I knew pretty instantly that I would be coming to El Paso. So, I got on a flight to El Paso and then landed here. And there were around the area where this happened and the shopping center where this happened. There were, of course, TV trucks from every TV station you could probably think of or news outlet you could think of. And one reporter asked very directly,
How do you blame Donald Trump for his anti-immigrant rhetoric for the shooting here?
You see a president who has been warning about the threats of caravans and asylum seekers who he's described as animals and an infestation. We cannot act as though this were just some kind of natural disaster or a matter of course for this country or the new normal for the United States. There is a very real cause to this, and President Trump is part of that, but he exists in a racist environment that is being fueled by Fox News, by those who on the internet traffic in these conspiracy theories.
So after that, he was approached by a couple, and the father started to speak with him for quite a while, and mostly he was just listening. The father was doing the talking, and I didn't know who the father was, and after they were done speaking, I just asked, you know, could you tell me your name, sir?
My name is Manuel Oliver. My wife, Patricia.
And how old are you both?
I'm 52, and he's 51.
I'm younger. Yeah. And I was talking about you.
And I assumed that they were from El Paso.
Are you from El Paso?
No, we are from Parkland. Correct. We lost our Joaquin in the Parkland shooting.
But it turns out they're from Parkland, and their son Joaquin had been killed in that shooting.
And you know what? We were waiting for Joaquin's today's birthday. His 19th birthday today. And I have to deal with this again. And we were trying, you know, and I'm not telling you this because that's why we came here, really. The purpose to be here for Joaquin's birthday is what we want to do something very remarkable, very important, and we want to do something with kids because Joaquin was very, I don't know, he was very sweet with the kids, and we decided to come here and visit all the detention centers when this happened.
And they had come to El Paso because today is his 19th birthday. As a part of their trip here, they wanted to go into Juarez to talk with the migrants there who are living in shelters and being held there.
And we were yesterday making, giving support to the families, migrants that are in Juarez, Mexico, when we heard that something was going on. And we didn't know what was going on because everybody was texting me. Okay, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay of what? If there is a shooting in El Paso, can you imagine that?
So this couple came to El Paso to honor their son, who had been killed in Parkland, in part by visiting a detention center. And while they were there, there was another mass shooting. This one motivated, it seems, by anti-immigrant sentiment.
That's right.
So just kind of an incredible, awful coincidence.
Awful, awful coincidence.
Well, I think maybe this happened for a reason. Joaquin brought us here for a reason. I believe I am very connected to him.
Yeah.
And I believe that he sees better there, what's going on there. So he brought us here because I think that he saw that this is about to happen and we have to stop this. Joaquin is a very demanding kid.
Yeah.
He was always, and he keeps pushing us. We are not here by mistake. How can you explain that we were here? And when we heard
it was impossible for me to talk with her without crying.
Yeah, it's clear from this tape that the conversation you're having with this couple is bringing up a lot of emotions for you.
So I've been a national reporter for a long time now, and I, like all of my colleagues, have had to cover so many of these shootings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always hard. And sometimes it's harder than others. And sometimes you somehow figure out a way to keep it together. And this interview, I couldn't.
About him. We are his, parents. And as his parents, besides that, we represent him physically here on Earth.
I also have this sense, Jenny, knowing you, that you must have probably felt you'd covered your last mass shooting when you went to go cover a presidential campaign. And you're covering a presidential campaign, and all of a sudden, as a result, you're also now covering another mass shooting.
The reporter part of me is way too much of a pessimist or a cynic to really have thought that I had covered my last one. I didn't believe that. But I did think I wouldn't have to during the campaign. And I certainly didn't think that in one of my first trips out onto the campaign trail that I'd be flying to cover another mass shooting.
Jenny, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If Joaquin brought us here, it was for a reason. And I'm just to listen that I'm with you. So we need to be out there. This is our problem, not the politician's problem. It's up to us how far we're gonna go with this.
We'll be right back.
So I'm here to provide an update for what you are well aware is an active shooter that occurred in the Oregon District in the early morning hours of today.
13 hours after the shooting in El Paso, early Sunday morning in Dayton, Ohio, a gunman opened fire in a popular district of bars and nightclubs, killing 9 people and injuring 27 others, using a legally acquired high-powered assault rifle.
A little bit of a timeline. Today at 1:05 a.m., officers were patrolling the Oregon District during bar closing time and heard gunfire. They observed a large crowd running away from this gunfire. The officers immediately advanced toward the gunfire.
Among the victims was the gunman's sister, who had come to the area with him. As of Sunday night, it was unclear whether the shooter had intended to kill her.
Threat was neutralized in approximately 30 seconds of the suspect firing his first shots.
The Times reports that police patrolling the area responded almost immediately, stopping the shooter just before he entered a crowded bar.
Any suggestion at this time of motive would be irresponsible. We do not have sufficient information to answer the question that everyone wants to know, why?
During a news conference on Sunday morning, Dayton's mayor, Nan Whaley, said she was both grateful and saddened by the messages she'd received since the shooting from her fellow mayors.
Well, look, as a mayor, this is a day that we all dread happening. And certainly what's very sad is I've gotten messages from cities across the country is that so many of us have gone through it. Today is the 250th mass shooting in America. It's sad that it's in the city of Dayton.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.